So Hare Krishna, I want to tell you a little bit how when we first had this idea that we would meet, I of course thought I would give, let me say that I would try to see what could make our meeting significant, what elements of our meeting amongst Vaishnavas could be, should be there, so that when you leave, you feel that, oh yes, we visited Gaura Bhavan, and we really felt it was a worthwhile journey. So I thought, in my own clumsy way, that this should be a something like a team building meeting, and I thought, well, for that we need to share what we need to share between each other, what we do, what we think is valuable, and these sharing sessions were there. And I also wanted to give you a little, let me say, insight into spiritual life, which would maybe come to you in a way which usually your insights don't come. I mean, usually we are in lectures or in meetings with devotees, and we become impacted by what they say. So I wanted to yesterday, with that little exercise is not the right word, with that little journey to the Berlin Wall, I wanted to see that you can learn something by moving into history. And that was something which lended itself, because it was still relatively impactful and relatively recent. It was still there. And I think when we moved to the wall, we felt, whew, history speaking to us. It was like I had done this once when I visited Jerusalem in Israel. I had gone to the wall of wailing, where the Jews go and lament about the miserable things which happened to them, and where they can also feel that they can address God. They put some little slits of paper into the crevices in the wall, and they feel that this message is now going in a direct postal way to heaven. So I also did this. I said, let me chant purely put this in the wall of wailing. And I felt millions of people had gone there and left something of their mood and something of their life. So that was why I brought you there, so that you would have a little Krishna conscious adventure. And I think when we were there, especially in the kirtan, we chanted it nicely. So today, I thought to bring your attention a little bit in this session, so to say, to the greatest transformative practice which is there in Kali Yuga, that is the chanting of kirtan, the chanting of the holy name, and in this way bring you to some understanding which hopefully stays with you, and which you will be able to give to others who come in contact with you. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Visaya Bhutale Srimad Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Name Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Vaskatya Vishnadharine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Vivaka Shivasadi Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So for Vaishnava, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the single most praman, that means the proof for something. We feel that the Srimad Bhagavatam is a literature which is apurusheya. That purusheya means it is spoken by or written by a man, and apurusheya means it is not spoken by a man, it is revealed by God. And because of that nature, the Bhagavatam, which was originally spoken by the Lord and received by Brahma, is considered to be the most relevant proof, or the most relevant source, I should say, for informations which guide our lives here in this material world, because it comes from God. That is because it's apurusheya. So in the Bhagavatam, a variety of subjects are addressed, and one subject is the best means to come to Krishna or consciousness or God realization. And already quite early in the Bhagavatam, this discussion, what is the best means, is discussed. And I have something here. Shukadev Goswami says to Maharaj Parikshit, O King, it is therefore essential. Essential means you cannot do without this, that every human being hereabout glorify and remember the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, always and everywhere. You should hear about him, you should glorify him in kirtan, and you should think of him. Those who drink through oral reception, fully filled with the nectarian message of Lord Krishna, the beloved of the devotees, purify the polluted aim of life known as material enjoyment, and thus go back to Godhead, to the lotus feet of him. So Maharaj Parikshit really has no time to be initiated into a lengthy yoga practice, because he is about to die within 7 days. So therefore, Shukadev Goswami has to give him a process which is both feasible, means he can do it in the short amount of time, and which brings about the desired result. It has to be practical. It has to, it has to be acceptable, and it has to be practical. And he says that process is that you hear about Krishna, it goes into your ear, it comes out of your mouth, you glorify him in kirtan, and you also remember and think of him. These three things are sufficient. And he says why they are sufficient. They are he describes that this will do something in you. It will purify the polluted aim of life. You take a notice of this. What this means is that we all are born with certain inclinations which make our pure of life. And the let us say, under the not stated pure of life, aim of life, of every conditioned soul is, from the spiritual point of view, impure. It is to enjoy the senses. That was the reason why the Eastern Germans wanted to climb the wall and run through the death strip, even at the risk of being shot and bled to death. Because in Western Germany there was more enjoyment. In Eastern Germany you have one brand of toothpaste on the shelf, in Western world you have five. There's a significant improvement, and that's why they run and risk their life even for this. That's why yesterday we thought, my God, Eastern Germany is not the real prison. Maya is a real prison. Yeah, such concepts are in the mind, you know. So we all have this impure goal of mind. It comes with us at the time of death to enjoy and to control. Lord Krishna speaks about this in the Bhagavad Gita at length. And he says that the living entities, Icha Dvesha Samuttena Dvandva Mohena Varata, he's born with strong desires he will accept that which is enjoyable and reject that which is unenjoyable. He will run away from Eastern Germany and reject that and try to find enjoyment in Western Germany, to speak in historical language about this. Yeah, so that goal of life is very deeply embedded in us, that impure goal of life. And when you hear and you chant and remember, you become, your heart becomes purified. Remember Mahaprabhu's image of the mirror which becomes purified from the dust. Yashoda Sutta, I can't see you. Please move a little. I have to make sure that you are with us in full concentration. So this happens when you hear and chant. Now, throughout the Bhagavatam, this is a reoccurring theme. So hear and chant about Krishna. It comes again in the second canto. Etani vidyamananam ichatam akuto bhayam. It's the fearless and doubtless way for everyone to chant Harinama Anukirtanam. That means the Nama of Hari in Kirtan. That's the fearless and doubtless way. If you do that constantly and after the ways of the great authority, you must chant not like the yoga scene chants with some speculation, but you must chant after the ways of the great authorities, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and what he explains. So, in the 11th canto, Shukadev Goswami does it. He praises Krishna in the longest canto in the Bhagavatam, the 10th canto. It's all about Krishna, his names, his forms, his pastimes. It's one big kirtan, so to say, one big glorification. And as you have all studied the Bhagavatam, I don't want to go into so many details here. It's the longest chapter, longest canto. And while Shukadev Goswami does this, I do not know if you are aware of this. There was one time when he fell, when he lost his consciousness and fainted. It was in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, when he had just finished the Agasura Leela and remembered how Krishna expanded himself in many, many, many forms during the Brahma Vimohana Leela. And this was, for Shukadev Goswami, so absolutely ecstatic that he fainted and fell on the floor. Now this was a problem. Shukadeva, Parikshit Maharaj had come to listen to the katha. There were 3.5 more days to go before his unavoidable death. Now the main speaker was on the floor, swooned, out of consciousness. It was a great problem. How would the katha continue if the main speaker is out? I mean, if Sharangata Tagore or Yashoda Sutta Prabhu or Beatrice would now be overwhelmed with great symptoms of ecstasy upon hearing the Bhagavatam, and we would think, well, it's not such a problem. We would just put them to rest somewhere, or put some drops of cold water on their forehead. And after some time, they will be back. But if I should faint at that moment, our discussion would come to the end. You know, so this was the problem. So Narada and Vyasa were there, and they knew how to bring back Shukadeva Goswami the life. That was by the very means by which he left his consciousness. You know, is not a thing applied therapeutically able to cure that which has brought about a disease. This is the very important knowledge of homeopathic and Ayurvedic medicines. You take a milk preparation, apply it therapeutically, that is, you make yogurt out of it, and then cure stomach disorders which come by drinking too much milk. So Narada and Vyasa knew this, and therefore they did kirtan with wampa loudly into the ear of Shukadev. There rose a big tumult. Hare Krishna. Shukadev resumed his katha because he woke up from his swoon. There are many, many, many proofs in the narrations of the Bhagavatam how chanting the holy name is the goal of the Bhagavatam practice. And at the very end of it, in case you are not yet convinced, our Shukadev Goswami again makes this point in a very, very clear passage. He speaks, he wants to give courage to Parikshit Maharaj. This at the towards the end of the whole Bhagavatam in the 12th canto. Parikshit Maharaj might think that my time is so short. What will I really reach the goal? And he says, Shukadeva Goswami now encourage him by telling him that even a man who has collapsed on his bed in death throngs, you know, death is about to take him, has a chance. It says here, terrified, about to die, a man collapses on his bed, crash, although his voice is faltering and he is hardly conscious of what he is saying. If he utters the holy name of the Supreme Lord, he can be freed from the reactions of his fruitive work, that means from sinful reactions, and achieve the supreme destination. And then Shukadeva Goswami shakes his head. But still, people in the age of Kali will not worship the Supreme Lord. The holy name is so strong, but people will not take it. Are we in that category? This question we can ask ourselves. We don't need to give an answer. And he says, in Kali Yuga, everything is polluted. He says objects are polluted. Places, this refers even to places of pilgrimages, don't have the same power potency, they are polluted. And even individual personalities are all polluted, confused. The Almighty Personality of Godhead, however, can remove all such contamination from the life of one who fixeth the Lord within his mind. In other words, although there is problem everywhere, and everything is polluted, and we saw yesterday the scenario around East and West Germany, how polluted everything is. But still, if you bring Krishna into the heart, into the mind, Krishna can come into the heart and purify that. If a person, he continues, hears about Krishna, glorifies Krishna, meditates about Krishna, worships or simply offers great respect to the Supreme Lord. That means if he comes for darshan in the Bhaktivedanta manner and offers great respect. It should not be mild respect, great respect. Who is situated within the heart, the Lord himself will remove from his mind the contamination accumulated during many thousands of lifetimes. Do you understand the logic here? Everything is very dirty, but the Lord and polluted, and your mind is very polluted. But if it should be possible that the Lord himself moves into your heart, he can take care of that. No one else can. Nothing else can work. And then he gives an example. Just as fire applied to gold removes any discoloration caused by traces of other metals, the Lord, when he comes within the heart, purifies the mind of the yogis. So you can see sometimes gold may be discolored because of the presence of other metals. At that time, you can't take water to wash it. You can't take air by blowing air over the gold. No other element than the fire element, the fiery element, will work in heating the gold so that the other metals will run out of the gold, they will remove. And he says now about other, and this happens when you chant, hear about Krishna, glorify him. It's like hearing and chanting, no? And he says the other processes don't work, like the process of demigod worship, austerities, breath control, compassion. He brings the process of Maitri, which I was talking about yesterday to the Nubia. They don't work. Bathing in holy places doesn't work. Strict vows to not eat anything any longer doesn't work. Charity doesn't work. Chanting of various other mantras doesn't work. Because one's mind cannot attain the same absolute purification as that achieved when the unlimited personality of Godhead appears within the heart, not by the process of hearing and chanting his glories. He says, now this is something you have maybe not yet encountered in your preaching. I sometimes encounter disenchanted devotees who leave our movement and go to other Vaishnava organizations where they hope to learn another process which works, and they want to go the easy way. they want not to work very hard to get so that their purified spiritual identity, that is who they are, emerges from the heart. No, they want some exalted souls to tell them, your spiritual identity is this. You are a Manjari, or you are a peacock, or you are something in your spiritual identity. But here Shukadev Goswami addresses this need in some spiritual practices. He says, my dear king, the personality of Godhead is the ultimate controller. He is the supreme soul and the supreme shelter of all beings. When meditated upon those about to die, he comes and reveals to them their own eternal spiritual identity. That's hope-giving, isn't it? Krishna himself, when he is meditated upon, when we hear and chant and don't do this absent-mindedly, but we do this with our mind fully present, he comes to us and he therefore purifies us. And the example is there. That is because this is such a great mystery. Shukadev Goswami had fainted earlier when he was discussing the subjects of the 10th canto, because he was at that time describing the sinful snake Agasura, a very sinful person. But somehow Krishna had entered him by force, and because Krishna was present in him, when he left his body, he was a pure soul. Remember how he left through the skull and he lingered in the sky as this pure soul and waited for the Lord to again come out. His spiritual identity was revealed. It was a soul. He didn't have yet a form because he was unfortunately very demoniac. He wanted to kill the Lord, and therefore he went into the Brahman, you know, without a specific form. But it worked. Krishna had entered him and had purified him from all sin. And that was so great for Shukadev Goswami that he needed to do some fainting. You know, it was just so great. So he reveals, Krishna reveals their own eternal spiritual identity. And then he says this verse, Shukadev Goswami, and I would request you to join with me to chant it. Kale dosha nide rajan, kale dosha nide rajan, asti he ko mahan guna, asti he ko mahan guna. Now listen to this. Even though you may not be the greatest pandit, you can understand this. Kirtanat eva krishnasya,
kirtanat eva krishnasya,
mukta sangha param vrajet,
mukta sangha param vrajet.
Little time is left. Shukadev Goswami now wants to summarize what he has said so far, and says, my dear king, although Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, there's still one good quality about this age. I think you know what that is. Simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one can become free from material bondage and be promoted to the transcendental kingdom. Stop, you might say. But where does it say in the text? Simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Mantra. This is typical for these Hare Krishna half scholars. They just punch in their subject, which is not there. But no, it is there. Kirtanat means the glorification. Eva means certainly, there's no doubt. And then Krishnasya, of Krishna, the name Krishna, and no other name is given here in the Bhagavatam. And do you notice this? And of course, the best way to glorify Krishna is if you take the main mantra, where there's a lot of Krishna in there. That's the Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. And then Hare Rama. Rama in the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is also the name of Krishna, the one who gives pleasure. No? Therefore, this mantra is to be chanted. There are various other Upanishads and scriptures which, you know, there's one Chaitanya Upanishad which describes, which is part of the Atharva Veda, and it describes Pibalayana who comes to Brahma, his father, and asks him for the supreme process which will work in Kali Yuga. And Brahma says, well, this process will be spread by one incarnation of the Lord, and he gives his name Chaitanya, and where he is born, near the, or where he appears, near the banks of the Ganga River, and he says he will spread the mantra composed of the three names of Hare, Krishna, and Rama. That's the Maha Mantra. So therefore, my dear devotees, in case you are not yet fully convinced, now you have no chance to be full of doubts any longer, because it is here where it said, my dear king, although Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, there's still one good quality about this age. Simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one can become free from material bondage and be promoted to the transcendental kingdom. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says it's bad, this age of Kali, but you know, just like a king can take care of so many bad thieves, the king of all processes, that is the chanting of Krishna's name, is able to destroy all the contamination of this age. And then it ends by saying that in other ages processes were different. In Satya Yuga it was meditation. In Treta Yuga performing sacrifices, and in Dvarapa Yuga serving the lotus feet in deity worship. But here in Kali Yuga, it's simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And again, you might say, I want to see that in Sanskrit. It says here, Kalo, in the age of Kali, Tat, that same result, Hari Kirtanat is done by Hari Kirtan. Now, very clear, I think. It is very very convincing in a way. But Hare Krishna, now fasten your seatbelts. How should we chant to make this process work? And I have written a book which is already, when it was printed, it was distributed so fast that it's now out of print, but we are just in the process of printing it really nice, and then you will get it. It's called Broken Names. In that book, it's a novel. It is described how someone has a broken face, and therefore chants not in the right way. He chants broken names. And he meets, he is about to give up his spiritual life, but gives it one last chance by going to his own Guru Maharaj in Vrindavan. His name is Gaura Kripa, and learning from him, and learning also from a very advanced soul who is searched by the Indian secret intelligence service. He was an anti-terrorist fighter, And he was the leader of those, and then he left all this and became a barber in Vrindavan. But now there is a planned attack on the parliament in Delhi, and only he is able to solve the case. So they want to take him out of Vrindavan and again put him into military boots. It's a very, it's a very dramatic stuff. So dramatic, it's, no one dies in that story. It's a pure story, sadistic story, but extremely very interesting. It says, simply chanting about Krishna, one can become free from material bondage and attain prema. I wanted to say, yes, how to chant. You can decide if you chant absent-mindedly or present-mindedly. This is really where the crux is. If you chant with inattention, the result will not come so quickly. Because to chant with inattention is called an aparad, an offense against the holy name. And if you chant with this offense, the effect of the holy name will not be there. It's almost like if a cloud comes before the sun and then blocks the warming sun rays from you, and you feel cold. So you must learn to chant with attention. Vishwanatha Chakravarti says, from chanting alone, which is not dependent on meditation or other processes, one attains the highest human goal, prema. Or chanting alone produces, he says, but chanting produces these results. What to speak of combining meditation with chanting? If you, here he speaks about smaranam, but smaranam is not necessary. Meditation, that is the process of the contemplative line in our Gaudiya tradition. They are usually referred to as the Babaji's. It's not required in this age to meditate. But what is required? My dear devotees, please take this from your visit. You have to learn to chant with attention. If you chant cloudy chanting, if you have clouded chanting, you can't see the sun. You can't, and worse even, you feel cold, Vrindavan Bihar. You can't feel the sun. In other words, that chanting with attention is necessary. And if you have, if you take one thing home from your visit with Gaura Bhavan, I have two messages. First, to do your determination stronger. That's why we went to the Berlin Wall, to feel a little. We want to escape the prisoner of Maya. You know, these Kamis did this for sin, to escape, just to go for the polluted game of all polluted goal of life. You know, if they just jumped over the wall. And I forgot to say there were 600 killings altogether, reported killings. The people can do this. We should also make a plan to escape the violence of Maya's fortress. And our process is by chanting the holy name, and that is by chanting with attention. Please take courage in this. This is the Bhagavatam's message. It doesn't have any other message for us. That you can go around this, look for other processes. Will not something else work? Or no, consistently through the pages of the Bhagavatam, this is given. This is the voice of God, Apurusheya, who is revealing this secret to us, and we must take this serious. Then our lives will be full with the Krishna Sun. our sinful reactions will be removed, our the transformation we are looking forward will be there, and in that way we will join a movement. It's called the Hare Krishna movement. Hare Krishna. I'm sorry to always speak in such a thought-provoking way. It's a good movement in this world. It's that movement. It's very nice to see this in the Bhagavatam. Would you like to see the last verse of the Bhagavatam? Usually the last word is always very important. The last verse of the Bhagavatam, it's the 12th canto. It says, Nama kirtanam, no, Nama sankirtanam yasya sava papa pranashayam pranamo dukkha samanas tan namami harin param. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord Hari, the congregational chanting of whose holy names destroys all sinful reactions, and the offering of oblations unto whom relieves all material suffering. No? All your sinful reactions will be effectively removed. And as we have heard earlier, you will get prema. Let us hear how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes about this concluding verse. He flows over with bhakti. He says, I offer my respect to Guru and Krishna and to the ocean of mercy, Lokanath. That's his line. O Krishna Chaitanya, O Gauranga, along with your associates, O unconditional ocean of mercy, please fill me with prema. Glory to the couple, expert in pastimes of Rasa and Vrindavan. Please lead me to your gopi associates. Be merciful to this commentary. Although I'm ignorant, you have made me write this commentary. O Krishna, O Bhagavatam, be pleased with this commentary. O protector of the cows, though I'm not intelligent, please accept and protect this work. Drink its milk, and if you are pleased, give it to your devotees. The final conclusion of the Bhagavatam is bhakti, the jewel of human endeavors. O devotees, this foolish person with fickle mind is crying out at your door like a dog without a master. Please give me a little of your mercy. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, what a devotee. He's the greatest commentator of the Bhagavatam. And he says like this. And at the end, this is for the Vrindavan lovers, he says, I offer respect to Govardhan, the best of lords, the Lord's servants, and I offer repeated respects to Radha Kund and Krishna Kund. So I'm very, very motivated to bring this knowledge to you from the Bhagavatam, and to request you to in your glorious organization. I came yesterday to the profound realization after Sahil had done this presentation. It finally went through my very ignorant brain. My God, these are really devotees who have very good, profound intelligence how to spread Krishna consciousness to this Pandava Sena. I really request you, take the holy name into your efforts. A lot of good holy name. Encourage the holy name singers which you have to remain pure in their presentations. you have some good Kirtaniyas there in London, very good devotees as well. And then I think by spreading this Yoga Dharma of the Holy Name, we can really give something valuable. It's important for us as leaders to know that we, where is our greatest gift to humanity? And I believe on the basis of these sacred texts that it's the Holy Name really. And once we wake up to this realization and do really our homework, that means chant in the morning hours, our rounds, and be present in kirtan, then we will be empowered in numerous ways by the Holy Name. I have seen this in my life. I must tell you that my life became, I tried to serve all these years since I'm young, but I noticed a profound change when somehow I began to understand it's the Holy Name which needs to be chanted. Then, and you know, the best part of it is all the things which happened in my service, they are not my own credit. It's somehow the Holy Name has arranged it and used me in some ways. And it's the fearless and anxiety-free way of doing service when you are empowered and led by someone else. Because I think when we go deep inside of us, we all think, oh, I'm not such an important person. Oh, I'm really an ordinary person. We all feel like this when we go inside of us. But the Holy Name can, when it is on our tongue, it makes us do, it makes us work in extraordinary ways. Rupa Goswami uses the example of ordinary well water. When it comes together with the Shalagram Shila, it is no longer ordinary well water. It is Charanamrita. Look, whereby great kings and rishis and the best of men. So when we come in contact with the touchstone of the Holy Name, the Nam Chintamani, although we may be ordinary, we become extraordinary, not because of our qualities, but because of the touchstone qualities of the Holy Name. Hare Krishna. I wanted to bring this to your attention, and I want to encourage you personally, in your japa, find in the morning hours, that's when we do the roots. You know, like roots cannot be seen by others, our japa can also not be seen by others, but Krishna sees, Krishna hears, and then it's where we should think how we can do something good, how we can do it nicely. We should really see how it can work, and I can really encourage you. We just you just have to want to make it work, and then you will, Krishna will get you the informations how you can chant. Now, I would like to offer myself as an example. I'm a very creative mind, like you may have seen. Sometimes I'm more creative than I would love to, you know, because I come from a family where we liked so much culture and we investigated everything, and I'm not the typical chanter of the Holy Name. I'm too restless with my mind, but I have found out how it can work for me, and therefore I like to chant from morning till evening. If you ask me what I like most, is just give me peace and hold the world away from me and let me be in my little room and let me chant. That is what I like most in my spiritual life. Really, I'm honest. It's not a false pretense. Sometimes it is difficult to, I must admit, to get it to the flow. I really have to do a few times this, you know, to get the right right position, you know, and then it works. A secret which I have now about to give to you. See, I think what we most fear as chanters is when we go through the desert and there's no taste at all and our mind is no longer connected to the practice and we have a whole day waiting for us and we need to attend to this, or when our children, you know, our Vrindavan Bihari is such a nice little child, and the child, we know that there's something which needs to be done for the child. And since we love the child, we are ready with our car to drive everywhere, and we have to chant. It's just so difficult at times when we have no taste. It's just so difficult. But there is a saying. When you go to this difficult zone, let us call it the desert, and you somehow stick it out and you go through, Krishna becomes very pleased with you. What is seen at the by the caterpillar as its very end is the birth of the butterfly. In other words, the difficulties which you encounter while you chant, they give birth to the real character of a devotee. When you are willing to go through the desert, when it comes, I always see this is now my chance to become a butterfly. My ego has to die now. The restless Satchidanand Swami, who wants to do permits and other things, has to die now. I'm not moving from here. I'm not moving. I just, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I want to read something interesting. Never mind. We will just chant now here. And this becomes the end of the caterpillar, the end of your old life. It's the birth for the butterfly. That's when you start. Or as they say in Croatian language, I don't know it in the language, but they say that the night is the darkest before the dawn of the sun. They say it like this, isn't it? Can you say it in Croatian language?
Noć je najtamnija pred zor. Noć najtamnija pred zor.
Yeah. That's a Croatian truth, you know. when it comes, the dark night, I always think soon the dawn will come. In other words, I gave positive value to it, positive determination. I have noted whenever you stick it out, it can be a period sometimes of a whole week where you have to stick it out, where you are tasteless because your mind is so restless and so on. But if you stick it out and you nevertheless continue, my dear devotees, there is magic which reveals itself. And I believe we are all tested in our own ways through that dark period. And it is something which is not only there in Krishna consciousness. In Christianity, you know, you must have heard the dark night of the soul. It's actually two dark nights. First, it's when your senses pull you somewhere else. This is how John of the Cross defines it. You want to eat something, or you want to, you know, just the senses give you trouble. But the real dark night is the second dark night, when you lose your faith, when your mind gives trouble. At that time, you have to walk the road of faith. If you leave the road of faith, you are lost. So I really want to encourage you, because I really believe this is Yuga Dharma, and in all our preaching, this is what we have to preach, or this is what, and it is known, those who walk their talk, in other words, who themselves practice what they talk about, they really have an impact on others. That is known, that we know from our life. Bhujan Prabhu always expresses it like this. He says, when you preach, it's not what you say with your lips which affects the audience, it's what is in your own heart that affects the audience. There's a realization. I know one statement, it says, what you are speaks so loud to me that I just can't hear what you say. It's louder, it speaks loud. And you may say, well, for the eardrums, maybe what someone speaks is louder, but for the heart, which the listening heart, it's really what is there in the other person. Hare Krishna. Dobro. So now I think I have presented you with the Bhagavatam thing. I hope it was interesting for you to follow a little bit the line of Shukadev Goswami's reasonings. It would be an interesting study, which I would love to do one day, is to trace out the kirtan in the Bhagavatam. You would be surprised. I have done a little, and I'm. It's there from the beginning of the first canto throughout up to the last verse of the 12th canto. But people in Kali Yuga, Shukadev Goswami said, they don't want to purify their heart. Therefore it escapes their reason. It's there, but they don't see it, you know, because they have another desire, polluted aim in life. Therefore they can't see. Good. Do you... I suggest...
Yes, there's still some time. We are really doing that. We should now have for half an hour or a little bit longer. We can have 35 minutes, up to 40 minutes. Then I would suggest we do a question and answer, and then we leave for this wonderful experience. You will, and there is a surprise waiting for you, but I can't talk about it now.
It is called the Room of Delight. This much I can say. The Room of Delight. Beatrice is looking, my God, what is coming after the war? Maybe it gets more intense. The Room of Delight is coming. So any questions you have, philosophical or just related to service and or anything.
Can I just ask you, would you like to bring salt?
Maybe a little before the meal. It's good. Yes, Beatrice.
Yesterday you talked about compassion.
I couldn't hear you.
Yesterday you were talking about compassion.
Compassion,
and,
yes.
Yeah, and I was wondering being concerned for others, when is it too much, or what's the correct level of compassion or concern? How to balance it?
Yeah. Remember in our tree of life, I wanted to explain that to that lady who had that problem with a loud neighbor, you know. You remember that? I wanted to, I mainly said, well, now it's time for the neighbor to show compassion to you when you tried many things. But I really wanted to say compassion is like is a fruit of a healthy understanding of taking care of yourself. That is, in our tree of life, it would be the roots which have to be strong, and the tree trunk, that is your physical and emotional well-being, have to be strong. Then you have a strong crown of the tree, which is compassion. Compassionate work requires that you are not burnt out. When you are physically and emotionally so down, then it is seen that your whole worldview shrinks to a very limited understanding of I and my needs, you know. But if you have taken care of your physical and emotional well-being in a reasonable way, not in overly way, you are strong enough to be compassion. For compassion, you need some strength. That is so important in our mentorship, that we take care of the mentors, that they are not overextending themselves and burn out too much. Because if they are too burned out and too strained and too stretched in many ways, then to get a phone call on top of it that I just had a terrible strife with my boss, and you know, I need to speak to you, and they come like, no, come on, I really have enough worries with me, you know, or as mentors, you have to deal sometimes with the problems of others, with the questions of others. And if you have too many problems yourself, it doesn't spring naturally from your heart, the compassion. You are not even good in doing it. Therefore, it's so important that as a mentor, you keep yourself fit so that you are in a position to be compassionate. Have we not all experienced this, my dear devotees, when we are really burned out and really finished, that then the smallest little thing gets on our nerves and we become irritated, and then to spend more time with another problematic living entity, you just feel, I want to close my door now. This is what I will do. I close my door, and then if this goes on, I close my door and I eat chocolate. Everything becomes so small and so reduced to unimportant things. We hear this. We can ask Buddha Bhavana this. When a person's, what is it? When they're burned out, remember there was this, I remember once there was this square, when you are always engaged in too many urgent things, then you tend to go from the just a boiling life where you do to just meaningless entertainment. that is what is going on, and the people just go, it's so much, they think, oh, I go to cinema and I just see just some foolish movie I have heard, some the Caribbean pirates, you know, something just absolutely foolish, you know, without any higher meaning of life, you know, because I'm not in the position to deal with anything of value at the moment, you know. So therefore, I really think this compassion as the fruit giving, where first compassion means your fruits which you have earned in your life, which you have built in your life. That's only possible if you have taken care of your roots and your tree trunk, that is your own lifestyle, which includes body and mind. think it's such a... By the way, that parable is an old parable. It's there in the... Bhagavatam says we should learn from the tree, you know, be tolerant, and tolerant that means also the value of compassion. You know, we should learn from this example, and I just took that and made and said, let's learn from the whole tree, including its roots, which we don't see, you know, and so on. It's an ancient thing, but also in other wisdom cultures, you hear a person should have roots. I think we say in English also, we have my roots, you know, and we as spiritual people. Think obviously of spiritual roots, not of just material roots, that means my family, but we know my higher family is God, and my God family, you know, spiritual roots. So I wanted to tell, I wanted to say this, but you know, the lady was so much in her neighbor sound, and I can understand her. You know, have you had a noisy neighbor? Only in India, maybe, but it can drive you crazy. You know, so at that time, the best advice is really not be compassionate to the neighbor. You have to say, like, have to give something more practical. Have I answered your question, Beatrice, to you? But please do this in a practical way. Take care of your tree of life. It's really a very powerful concept. And it's really taken from the scriptures, you know. And I'm just now following Buddha Bhavana's advice that you must repeat it. Then it sticks in the mind. Gosh. Anything else? Yes, Buddha Bhavana Prabhu.
One devotee in the UK had three questions they wanted me to ask you, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
The first one was, one of them was, what is pride, and what specifically should one be doing to counteract their pride? So if you could define what is pride, and what should one do to counteract it, please.
I have taken dictionary definitions of pride, and they vary, but the way we use it is an inflated concept of ourselves. Inflated means you are this big, but when pride comes, you inflate like a balloon, and it's out of proportion. Mm-hmm. An inflated concept of yourself. And Mahaprabhu says that's not good. You, even if you are by any chance extremely talented, he says that the opposite of pridelessness is dainyam. That is, that even a learned person considers himself very small, and what he, what is the basis of the thinking yourself humble or small, is that you understand I'm just a part and parcel of Krishna. You dive in the spiritual reality, and once you're in the spiritual reality, all this inflated falsity is just disappears. That's why we see, you know, these really powerful individuals, like someone like Radhanath Maharaj, who has accomplished so much, you know, in the world. When you meet him, you see the humble soul, you know, or Lokanath Maharaj. You can see he's walking like this, you know. He's made Padayatra, famous all over the world. And you can talk to our devotees when they're not overly stressed, you know. Or that's what I so much enjoy when I'm with my God brothers. They are also accomplished, but when you talk with them, the way they feel is, no, Krishna's mercy, I'm just trying to serve, you know, like this. even if you look at Prabhupada, I like this very much. Ravindra Swarup Prabhu remembers that once the devotees all brought Srila Prabhupada to the airport, to the waiting lounge, and they all felt so much closeness that they went into the waiting lounge somehow or other. So it was so full, the waiting lounge, that the actual passengers who needed to be there and needed to embark the plane from there had no place to go there. So the airport officials said, please vacate and move out of the waiting lounge for the flight so-and-so to Boston. The first one who got up was Prabhupada and moved out. It's not that he's full, he just felt, I'm occupying place, I need to go now, so that others can sit down. It was such an some unmeditated move, and it came from the deep bottom of humility. So pride is an inflated concept of yourself, and it can go only if you move from the material level, where you are inflated by all these designations. I did this, I did that, I can do this, to the spiritual level, where all this disappears and you are just a servant of Krishna, a small soul, and so on. And it is this, I have surprises for you. To be humble is such a happy and joyful life. When you have to defend your designations, I'm Sahil, the president. You don't derive pleasure from this at all. It's so much nicer to be free from this and to be natural in the way of a spiritual definition. That is how I would answer this question. There is, however, something in pride, the way the word pride is used in contemporary language, where pride is not something bad. The contemporary people sometimes say pride like use this word of in the sense of confidence, you know. And Narottam Das Goswami refers to this aspect of pride when he said pride can be used in the service of Krishna by thinking I'm part of Krishna's family, I'm his devotee, he's my master, you know. It's the pride of a servant. You could better, we would say in our language, we would replace this and would say it's confidence. My Lord is behind me. In other words, a humble person is able to do many things because he is confident that the Lord is there. He has that type of pride, this good pride, that the Lord is there. I'm somehow in his family. You know, that good pride he has. But the negative side of pride, which all our scriptures object to, is that pride in the sense of a false, inflated concept of yourself. Like, I'm the doer. This is all inflation. It's called inflation of inflatedness. Inflatedness. We say in Deutsch, aufgeblasen. You know, aufgeblasen means inflated. That's an aufgeblasener Mensch. We say in English also puffed up. No, we say like this. It is inflated, you know, because some air. It's just air. It's nothing, you know. Krishna, aufgeblasen. It's a blown up. Do we say he's blown up? We say also in English he's blown up or puffed up, we say. Yeah. Anyone else before we turn to the telephone, the anonymous person in the telephone. Beatrice is always full of questions. Let us see for a while. Question: what could we discuss? No, you have to ask. Yes, questions. When we ask questions, it's an invitation for discussion. No, we have discussed about everything. There is. I had a question at the outset of the meeting, which was so beautifully answered by you all in a non-verbal way. And I'm really so grateful to all of you that you answered this question to me. I always have the question, how can I best serve? This is my it comes when you get older. You want your life to be meaningful. And meaningful means you do nice service for Guru and Krishna and the Vaishnavas. And I'm sometimes maybe getting on people's nerves because I have this nature, and somehow I felt so nice when became clear to me in that session where we did this, I called it, how can I best serve you? It was really, for me, my vision or my mission in relationship to Pandavasena. That was there. And it turned out so clearly we will organize all these practical things and we just want a senior association and guidance. And I felt, wow, it was it became so clear. It was stood in the room like a beautiful elephant. It was obvious, in other words. And I became so encouraged, because when you want to be, when you are getting older, that's what you wish to do. You want to share what you have experienced in life, what you are absolutely certain about, for the benefit of the younger ones. That is what you feel, and it became clear. So my question was answered yesterday. I also had an agenda, so to say. I can say it now. Yes, Sahir, you have something.
One question I had was I was trying to understand the difference between the want for appreciation and for ego, in the sense that, like, you know, if a devotee encourages you in your service, is that I get happy from that. Is that happiness derived from false ego? Is that happiness derived from I've benefited someone, so I'm happy that it's helped? Or I don't know how to differentiate between the two.
Yeah. Ultimately, Sahil, you will know the answer to this question when you become spiritually mature. There is something which is permissible in getting appreciation. It's like a need which we all have. And remember, needs are always legitimate. They are things which we need to function, like food or air or water. So there is also this need of appreciation. You can say, how is it a need which is legitimate? We should be... Well, look at it like this. If you are not wanted because everyone thinks you're worthless, then you can't do anything. We had this I met a devotee in America. This devotee received some information by other devotees that we don't want you. Okay, you know, it was one god brother of mine. We don't want you. And then the god brother told me, now I just can't go to this community, and I feel my very existence is denied. We don't want you. So I can't even go there. I can't feel happy. I will move my address. I will go to some other community. There was a misunderstanding. And, you know, sometimes misunderstandings are so bad that they can't be easily solved. You know, it was one of those cases which was complex, really complex. And I could see, because of he didn't get any appreciation for anything he did, he just couldn't function any longer. Does any one of us feel when we go and we want to do something and someone looks with us with eyes full of suspicion? We just can't do anything. We can't offer. We just feel, oh, he's so... You know, isn't it when we sit before an audience and they all sit like, ah, oh, now this Hare Krishna, okay, he's on the program. Maybe I have to tolerate what he says. We don't feel encouraged to speak. And what we speak most properly is terrible because we are broken. Now, I have had this many times in Germany that, oh, this Hare Krishna, how did he get into the speaking list? You know, and now we have to tolerate it. And some people already run and go, pretend they have to go to the toilet. They don't have to go, you know. And you feel like, yeah. You know, you want to now speak about love of Godhead, and you know you're not appreciated. It's as if someone just takes the air away from you, which you need, or pulls the floor around, not the floor, the earth under your feet, and you're in outer space. You don't know what to do, where to stand. So that type of, we need that as a human being, some type of appreciation. That now, in this dual world, you can go from this need and you can use it to inflate your ego. And the ego can do that, Sahil. There's the German philosopher who read a lot of Eastern knowledge, Friedrich Nietzsche, you might have heard about him. He said, everywhere I go, a dog called ego follows me. It can come in any area of work, and you only know when it comes. I feel in my case, it comes, that appreciation, when I'm no longer open to critique. Like, I will give you something from my experience. I'm a lecturer, and I'm obviously interested that my service of giving a lecture is meeting with some interest, because that's all I do as an older devotee. I give spiritual knowledge, and if I'm not appreciated, I feel miserable because I can't do anything. So let us say, you know, after I have given a lecture, I sometimes asked for feedback, not sometimes, often I ask for feedback, how did this go? How was it? And then when it comes that I only want to hear the good feedback, and when I hear the feedback like it was too long, some thought it was too long, you know, they had to catch the last bus, but you were still talking, and you know, they didn't know, can they go, or so on, or you gave an example which made someone really look foolish, you know, or it, you know, there are things which we do wrong in lecturing, or you just stayed so long on this point, it was already clear, and there was no systematic, we couldn't see why did this point have to come, what did it have to do with what you wanted to say. There are many mistakes you can do when you give a lecture, many and endless mistakes. And if I become so hungry for appreciation that I'm not open to hear that any longer, then I know I have become an energy sucker. That is, I want only appreciation to inflate my ego because I'm so insecure. That is when I know this in the lecture context. Or let us say, because you have asked, Sahil, in your service, you do so many things. If you should ever come to the stage where devotees feel, we can't talk to Sahil, we can't tell him that here is something he has overlooked, then you know some mistake is there. And we have this with one leader in Sweden. We have this. I don't want to give the places away, so then you might like to know who that is. We have this with a leader who is doing so well. The whole yatra is very much grateful to him. But there are a few things which he doesn't do, and many have tried to tell him, please, we appreciate you. You don't be so insecure. You don't have to defend yourself. But this area was overlooked. And this is the result. And he cannot hear it. And it is such a problem, because it becomes an area of overlooking. This, it becomes an overlooked area, not tended to, this area, which now spreads bad results, you know, to the lives of others. But he just can't hear it. He can only hear, you did this so good, you did this good, you did this good. And here we can see the need, the natural need has gone into the minus department, the minus thing, and it's usually insecurity which is there. So we must be open for, as long as you are open to feedback, good feedback from then you know you're fine, you're all right with your need. But as long as that gives you pain, or as soon as that gives you pain and you close off and you start to defend yourself, no, you don't see it the right way, don't you see all this work which I've done, or all these points of consideration, you know how we defend ourselves, how we go, you don't know, that's the first thing we say. You see only this isolated thing, but there is a whole good thing of good intention and work. And so then we know we are going on thin ice now. It's becoming dangerous. But ultimately, Sahilji, only you will know. It's difficult to see when is the need of appreciation, when is it still a justified or legitimate need, or when has it gone out of sync, you know. But some good signpost to look for is when you become inaccessible to, in German we say Kritik. Kritik has, for most of us, and that shows you how insecure modern man is, a negative connotation. In the original word critique, it is absolutely not neutral. It's good to get critique. We would now say feedback to the word critique, because we are when we hear only critique, we go like, oh no, they don't understand me, I don't want any criticism. Criticism is very good in the old Greek word. Our language changes with the way people the way people change, you know. So words get a slightly different connotation. Critique is good, feedback is good, you need it. We all need it. We have blind spots which we absolutely can't see. They are natural to be there, because it's almost like a blind spot would be here on my neck for me. I may have a birthmark here, and I can turn my head as much as I will. I can do yoga for turning the head 360 degrees around. I will not be able to see the birthmark on my neck. You know, it's not possible. Only someone who is not in my position, an outsider, can see that. Critique is very necessary. You can't, no human being can solve all the problems or see everything. It's simply not possible. Do you know that dentists never drill their own teeth? Do you know this? They go to someone else because it's not possible. They destroy the whole mouth if they would do it, because the moment they hit, and how will they see exactly, you know, they will be finished, you know. They need to go to someone else. So we all need to go to someone else, Sahil. And especially when we do something so absolutely responsible as Pandavasena service, where you become an architecture for a growing society, a growing community, you absolutely need to get feedback. How am I doing? Where can I do better? And obviously we like to go to those where we feel confident that they know a little bit the area of, you know, what needs to be done. Krishna. That is my answer to this question. But certainly there are areas which I have overlooked, which need attention to this question, other dimensions of this question. That's very difficult. Very difficult. Because it's so difficult, we usually throw out the child with the bathing water. In other words, we don't talk any longer of justified appreciation, because it's a very thin line. You know, we say no appreciation at all. You know, the devotee has to be humble. But there is a psychological need which is as strong as the physical needs, you know, the psychological needs are there for appreciation. This is definitely there. Just because it's so difficult to know when exactly is the need for appreciation self-serving and egoistically, just because it's so difficult to know, you can't say, well, let's not deal with justified or legitimate needs for appreciation. No human being can do without that. No, it's not possible. Yes.
I had a question which I'm not expecting a straightforward answer to, because it's, you know, I'm not sure one exists, but it would be useful to get your kind of insight into it. And it's around the mentorship system. We spoke yesterday about how we're seeing now that the first kind of group of mentors who are married now with young children, etc. And one of the things that seems to be apparent and causing a real concern or constraint in their capacity to be good mentors is around either the relationship between the husband and wife, where it becomes strained. Either their, you know, life is too busy, their work is taking, you know, they don't have control over their work hours, and how that then affects their ability to then give advice.
Yeah.
So you have a situation where you've got people who are relatively newly married, so a couple of years into their marriage, who are not so successful so far in their marriage, you know, there's tension there, or they're having difficulty with raising children, etc. And but they're still responsible for 5 to 10 young kind of sainas. And then the dilemma is, well, do I just stop trying to take care of somebody else whilst I sort myself out and my own relationships out? Or do I try and continue to give that guidance to others, but then am I in the right place to do that? And I see that's becoming, I mean, I think there are two issues. I suppose I'm asking two issues. One is that there is a need to address the stability of grihasthas and the relationship between husband and wife, but then how then that impacts in their role as Pandavasena mentors.
This is a very, very... This question, I have met this question in my own life and in the lives of many others in a different form, but essentially it has the same thing. can we preach, although we are not perfect, you know, that can we preach with all our issues which we still have? And Prabhupada would always say, yes, as long as you do the right thing, as you deliver the message, if you are a good mailman, you just bring the letter as it is, and you can be lousy in your character, but you bring that is the understanding. But as you have hinted already, I think there are two issues to look at. One, I've tried to give one simple answer, that is, yes, even though you may have problems in your marriage life or in your economical life or in your anything, you can still give the Krishna conscious advice if you just stick to the parampara, I guess, or to yes, but there's another issue there. If you have problems, they should be addressed at least in a Krishna conscious and in informed and in a powerful and solution giving ways. And there is something we have to preach to. We have to help the mentors also. That area, I think, will come more and more. I want to give you an example from the German police. The criminal police has to deal in Germany, like all over the world, I guess, with very, very difficult cases. I mean, they are the first who come at right after the crime is committed and see all this, or have to deal with the people who are still alive or who are directly concerned with it. To be a criminal police a person is very difficult. Very difficult. So the criminal department had to come up with something to deal with these people, because so many criminal officers in 1 year. I had one disciple who is a criminal officer herself, it's a lady. They have either shot themselves or committed suicide because they just couldn't deal with the amount of violence and with all the aftermath after the violence, you know. And they have committed suicide because it just became too much for them. And now they have, that there is a new thing, maybe since 10 years it's not a new thing, but they have psychologists who are specifically trained to just consult these individuals who have seen so much violence, so much injustice, so much just darkness in the human psychology, that they had the suicide thing. It was like a wave which went through the police, the criminal police at one stage, had to be stopped by this, by the counselors, you know. They have other things in the criminal police, like criminal inspectors who go after so-called criminal inspectors who are in reality doing crimes, you know. It's also there. But let us deal with this department first, you know. So we also will need to see that our mentors if there is help. But sometimes, Naveen, it is difficult, and we are not able to give so many working places. That's why I like the work of Gadada so much, who engages devotees, and he is such a nice person. I want to say something good about Gadada. He prefers an incompetent devotee to a super competent non-devotee, to to engage him, because he thinks, we have now Lakshmi, we have now some success, let us share it with our brothers and sisters, you know, so that they can go. He's a very nice character. You might have, when you sat with him, you can see he has a nice character, and you can immediately feel that a good person. So, but we don't have working places throughout the countries. It's not, at least not enough at the moment. And therefore we might have, I like this concept of our Radha Gopinath community. They have one place also where I think it's called the economical Rat, you know, where people can go, devotees can go and say, is there some work for me somewhere? And then they find out, yes, there is so-and-so dentist, he needs someone who cleans the office. Oh, I can do that. I can't do complicated things, but I can clean after the day the rooms. And, you know, they, maybe we need to have something like this eventually for our devotees, like a work trade office, you know. How do we call these offices? Buddha Bhavana, you would know.
It's like a recruitment. Something where devotees can find work with other devotees.
Yes.
Like a kind of recruitment agency.
Yeah, something like that, you know. Maybe, because that in the Grihastha ashram is a huge problem. Because not so many Grihasthas are well trained, and then even if they are, the work market has only X numbers of places, and there are many running tough places. I think but even though everything may not be all right, because for some it is difficult. Imagine I would go out of work, out of preaching. You know, for me it's so easy. Everything is given to me. I don't know anything. I know some amount of English. I know. You know, I'm maybe interesting in the working market. I could do some translation. You know, my older brother. You might laugh about me why I think like this. I have an older brother who was a teacher in the Gurukul in New Vrindavan, and then there was some problem in New Vrindavan. Then he went to Miami with his young family of, and they just had little babies, and he could not get any Lakshmi any longer from teaching. So he was there, and somehow he found some office work in the temple office, which was needed because he's good with computers and office work. But then he needed to go to Germany because his visa expired for America and he could not get a new visa. And then he came to Germany and he was 40 something years old, and now he needed to take care of a family of three children and his wife. And he went, my father told me, I took your brother to the work office where you are interviewed, what can you do? It's called the Arbeitsamt, the work office, they call it in German. And they started to ask the questions. After some time, the person who conducted the interview was, where were you? You seem to not be integrated in the German society. I was in America. Yeah, but you must have done some work in America. No, I was in the Hare Krishna community. Hare Krishna was that. So then some information was required to give him the information. And is there anything you... And they said, Acha, you have not studied anything? No, I have no qualification. Acha, he did say Acha, he was a German. My father said, but he's my son. Who are you? Then he gave the name, which was somewhat known, you know. And, this is one of you. We heard about you in the newspaper. Acha, yes, you are. Ah, he's my son and I need, can you not give him? Yes, I said, we are willing to help you, Mr. Peterson, because Father has done many good things for the German society. So we are willing to help you, but what to do? He's not qualified, according to the... Then he said, but he can speak English. He was in America. So this is how my brother started his working career as a translator of German letters, business letters, into the sweet English language. You know? And that is how he started. And he, after some time, he was established in his work. And he, but my father is telling me this difficulty, and he said, most probably many of your young people are interrupting their studies, and you know, because their spiritual urge is so strong. Therefore, I personally believe when you preach to young people, you somehow need to have their whole life in your mind. And for most of them, they will marry, they will have to work, and therefore it might be good if they have done some type of studies. But nowadays, it's no guarantee that a studied person gets a job. It's no longer like this, like it used to be. And so it's a whole... I think it's an area which needs attention on its own, but still, so I would say to those mentors who are totally fighting to get a job or to get their relationship with their wife together, or to understand how to deal with children, their own children, I would say, if you are so old, you're so experienced in Krishna consciousness, we would really, we need you. You can give them a feeling that they are needed. Then, but you would not give them a counseling load which may be too big for them to handle. Maybe instead of 8, they take care of 4, or something like this. Yeah. I'm just thinking of my brother. My brother is a little like, you know, we are brothers, so he, for him, I asked him, only recently, a week ago, I asked him, was it difficult to find anything? And he said, you know, after I have done so much service in our movement before, and I've learned Krishna can do, make everything possible. I had faith that Krishna would find a solution. You know, he thought it was a nice answer. But yes, it was difficult materially, but Krishna has taken care of me. And yeah. Good, let us see where we are with our time. It's, I would say, we leave here in half an hour. And I wanted to write some letters to give to you. The devotees wrote me, wanted to answer the letters. At 3 o'clock our next appointment is, and maybe you want to, I don't know, I can, maybe you want to, I give now a modern word, chill out, oops, you want to do something more peaceful, or you need, want to catch up with the last remaining rounds. Let me, we will have another session in the afternoon. We don't need to overdo it. What is our plan?
The plan is on this, because the lotus are leaving at 10 o'clock.
In the evening?
Yes.
Wonderful.
I mean, the airplane is leaving at 10 o'clock, not from here.
Oh.
So,
Everyone leaves at the same time, or do we have also Buddha Bhavana?
So that's an important information.
And we can fit them all in the red car, isn't it?
Yes.
With the luggage.
Yeah.
So what does this mean?
We would have to start 7 o'clock from here.
7 o'clock.
9:50.
Yes. 9:50. Yes. 10.
Yeah.
10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10.
10. 10. 10.
10.
10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. 10. We have scheduled like 3 to 5 because here in Armenia we want to talk and discuss most probably.
Then we have
another. Then we thought to come back here for another 2 hours.
And or the luggage is here?
In the car already.
In the car already,
yes.
Packed up and
yes.
Everything.
Just
nice.
Just with the altar.
Yeah, but the altar is here. Fine. Then we know. Thank you. Then we know. All right, then you are on your own for half an hour. Hare Krishna. Thank you. It's so enlightening to spend Krishna conscious time.